this is what you're fighting for. I mean, every day you're out there.
What they're doing is blowing people off.
If you continue to look the other way and shut up, then the oppressors, the authoritarians, get total control and total power. Because this is just like in Arizona. This is just like in Georgia. It's another element that backs them into a corner and shows their lies and misrepresentations.
This is why this audience is going to have to get engaged. As we've told you, this is the fight.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room, Battleground. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Of course, Donald Trump and the Republican Party are going to take advantage of anything that appears like chaos or an indulgence of chaos on the part of Democrats. So I think what we're seeing now on campus is probably a prelude to what we're going to see in Chicago, where the Democrats are going to have their convention again, I think for the first time since 68, as if they just couldn't resist returning to the scene of the crime this summer. And I don't think it's going to be a scene that will help them to show that Joe Biden's in control of the country. And that's sort of been a recurring Republican attack, that he is, that the country and the world are out of control and he's too old and feeble to keep them under control. Can I say one thing about the demonstrators, which is I think they properly were horrified by the number of deaths of civilians in Gaza. And when they called for a ceasefire and peace, they seem to be calling for an end to this suffering. But that has shifted to calling for an end to Zionism, which is essentially an end to Israel. And in Arabic, from the river to the sea, Palestine shall be free, is actually Palestine shall be Arab. I don't know if the students know that, but it's a call for the elimination of Israel. How is it that students have perhaps unwittingly embraced the ideology of Hamas? I think it's because they have been trained and educated in an atmosphere where there really is only one truth. And that truth is that there are oppressors and they're oppressed. White Jewish Israelis, as they see it, are the oppressors. Non-white Arab Palestinians are the oppressed. And that's the end of the story. It's as if Israel's the last place where post-colonial theory can go to find oppressors and victims. And so it becomes a very simple matter. And the whole complicated history of those two people is erased.
It's Monday, 29 April, year of the Lord, 2024. I think there's some truth there and also some not understanding truth. The colonizers... Well, first off, about the white Israelis, this was Ackman, Bill Ackman, who now is out tweeting nonstop about how Democrats can't support Biden and Biden should have stepped aside. And now he's going to vote for Trump. He's going to support Trump and all this. It was Ackman who went through, and Ackman was one of the guys that underwrote Harvard. And now he knows the radicalization. And unlike Leon Cooperman and Kraft and the rest of these big Jewish donors, Ackman admitted, because when he saw what was happening, because he's a smart guy, one of the smartest hedge fund guys out there, not politically smart, quite naive, but a very smart hedge fund guy. When he saw what was happening at Harvard, he actually commissioned a bunch of consultants and advisors to go in and check DEI and CRT and all this. And he came out, I don't know, it would look like a 5,000 word Twitter post where he goes through categorically on CEI and he says, hey, I didn't realize that every department in Harvard's been taken over in the hiring process. And he went through and deconstructed it. But he had the power line. He had the punchline in the middle of this. He goes, you know, I got the reports back at CEI. He says, I was really shocked at what I found out. And that is that Jews are white. About in the CRT and the DEI, Jews are white. Just like the guy at the Atlantic just writes out there. Then all of a sudden, hey, guess what? Israel, you're a colonizer, you're an oppressor, because these kids are fed this neo-Marxist nonstop that it's about race, when it's not actually about race, but that's what they're fed nonstop. And that's why you see this revolt going on. You see it playing out. The truth he told right there, which I haven't heard anybody in mainstream media, and I'm so glad a writer for The Atlantic, in a piece on The Atlantic on MSNBC, said it. it's not from the river, from the sea, Palestine should be free. It translates, and when you see it in its native tongue, is Palestine should be Arab. This is a Sharia supremacist movement. This is what Trevor Loudon and Frank Gaffney, who were mocked and ridiculed for decades when they talked about this, the red-green merger. The progressives aren't progressive. They are neo-Marxists combined with Sharia supremacism because they're united against their common enemy, and their common enemy is the Judeo-Christian West and what they perceive is the white supremacist nature of that. Now, we invited Jeremy Carl back. He's got, and quite frankly, his hit the other day on the show, the feedback I got from people was pretty enormous. But you also, I saw an article and saw it, and I said, this article's so brilliant, I got to get the writer. And of course, I go up, it's Jeremy Carl. So, Jeremy, I want to start. We'll get to your book in a second. The book, by the way, is already a massive hit, The Unprotected Class, How Anti-White Racism is Tearing the Country Apart. I actually would argue it's tearing the world apart. But I want to go to your brilliant piece, which is, and I think it's either derived from the book or inspired by the book or maybe lifted from the book, how America is not the first empire to fall because of open borders. Give me your theory of the case, because I think it cannot be relevant, because I said it on Sid Rosenberg's show today on WABC. I said they should go into these encampments. And first of all, shut them down. But number two, they should take every foreign visa in there for these students or agitators, and they should be deported immediately, because this is one of the problems. And the faculty the same way. Everybody's on a visa or anything on a faculty, these Marxists, boom, out. Administrators out. We got to purge these Marxists in these faculties. We got to purge these Marxists in these administrations. Jeremy Carl, what other empires have fallen because of open borders, sir?
Well, thanks very much, Steve. And it's great to be on. And as you noted, actually, that is an excerpt from my book. And I just modified it just a little bit to turn it into an article. But the primary one that I talk about in that particular piece is ancient Rome. And again, this is not sort of an idiosyncratic or weird or countercultural take I have on it. There's a very distinguished British historian, Peter Heather, who's kind of a couple of books actually on how essentially Rome let in what they called the barbarians, kind of these Germanic tribes. And some of them, I mean, they were literally like, they were refugees. They were actually legitimate refugees, unlike the folks who are usually claiming asylum status today. But they let them in. And then shortly thereafter, they basically lost control of their border. They lost control of their culture, and these groups had a military rebellion against them. And so that ultimately, that decision in, I think, 376 to sort of let these tribes that were fleeing from the Huns into ancient Rome leads directly to the ultimate fall of Rome and the Western Roman Empire in 476 AD.
How does this play in fact, when we use the example of Red Ice TV as one example of some of these channels, and that's obviously a very well-produced series of shows. But when they argue, even in your book, the Romans, when they let this happen, they actually were letting in, the Germanic tribes were actually white. And in fact, when you go to a lot of these, what I would call ethno-nationalist sites, they hearken back to kind of the pre-Christian conversion of these tribes as like a golden era, that this was the right white race that is most pure. This is before they had essentially a Middle Eastern cult, layered over them and had to convert. So how does that tie to your bigger theory of the case? Because you see what's happening in the country today. We have Biden admits they let in 8 million illegal alien invaders in this country. And yes, some of those are from Ukraine and some of those are from other Western nations, but very little when you look at the 8 million. If you count the 15 million, which we think is just on Biden's watch, this is not overall, but the 15 million invaders, the vast majority are from non-Western cultures. How does that compare to the Roman Empire, that you would actually argue they might have even let in people that were more Caucasian than them, sir?
Sure. So, I mean, I think it really does stress that it's not just the kind of quote unquote racial element. And this is where I think some of the kind of racial nationalists become a little incoherent in ways that you correctly touched on. It's like, who's the real symbol of whiteness here? These German barbarian tribes or kind of the great ancient culture of Rome, which we sort of, you know, if you go to DC, all of our buildings, a lot of our institutions are kind of derived from. But certainly all the problems that you're seeing are kind of particularly magnified when there's such obvious visual difference. And a lot of these people who are coming from places that really have no connection to America. And then kind of to kind of come back to your opening, which I think is really important, the Israel question, right? And sort of suddenly these liberal Jews have discovered, and particularly these wealthy Jewish donors, that they are in fact white. Now, that's always been true from the 1790 Naturalization Act in the United States. But I think some of these leftists were sort of surprised to find out that they were not going to get to be in a victim class. And that explains a lot about some of the ferment that we're seeing on campuses today.
Well, no, but that gets to your thing about unprotected. I want to go, before I get back to the unprotected class, I want to go back to the ethno-nationalists. And look, we watch, as I said the other day, a lot of ethno-nationalists, whether that would be, you know, Black or whether it be La Raza. We watch it just so we can curate it and understand what's going on. The white ethno-nationalists, the same. But when you go back to the founding of the Republic, it took Greece, Jerusalem, and Rome, and mostly the Roman Republic. But you would argue when you take Greece, Jerusalem, and Rome as the centerpiece or the backbone at that time of Western civilization, that that flies in face of the Germanic barbarian tribes. It's not lost on people that in Gladiator, the opening scene, it's the Roman legion up there at the very north when they send the head of the ambassador back and kind of throw it out in the Germanic tribes are, let's bring it, right? But our right. The founders of our republic looked at Greece, Jerusalem, and Rome as the kind of tripartite, taking most of it. They thought the perfection of that was the Roman Republic, sir.
No, absolutely. I mean, again, I think this is where the sort of hardcore ethno-nationalists really go wrong, because it was really from the founding of the U.S., all of these different streams that came in, and kind of ironically, you could even go back to, we were about 85% British, as best people could tell, at founding in terms of our citizen population. But there was 9% German, and you can go back and you can read Benjamin Franklin being very worried about German influence, and he wasn't the only one. So some of these sort of more extreme pagans kind of do things that, whether, you know, whatever you think of the merits of them, they're certainly outside of the American tradition.
I want to go to Bill Ackman and the concept of protected class, because this is one of the centerpieces of your book, which I think is quite powerful. Ackman, who's a very smart guy, and remember, he had given so much money to Harvard, he was kind of shocked when he saw this, when he saw, you know, Lee Stefanik just destroy the heads of these universities and the gobbledygook from the DEI appointed president of Harvard. Ackman's going, what in the hell's going on here? He hired his own consultants. And these consultants were quite steeped in DEI, CRT, all of it. And they came back to him. And that's why, if anybody gets a chance, and I'll put it up on in our live stream and make sure people see it, and Grace and Mo will people see it, is that Ackman's Twitter, it was like 3,000 words. And it was very logical how he went into it. But the punchline is he basically gets down and he said this thing had gotten so deep into the fabric of Harvard in the hiring and the formation of the curriculum and the teachers. And basically he was stunned when he saw and they told him that the Jews are not a protected class. In fact, yeah, they're in with the crackers. They're in, you're dumped in with the deplorables. That was his Damascene moment. That was his cathartic, that he goes, well, hang on for a second. I've been underwriting this and I kind of thought we were a protected class. How important is that, this concept of protected class, of how the neo-Marxists have kind of run the deal, not just at the universities, but throughout all of corporate America and quite frankly, all of institutional America?
No, it's really important, Steve. And I think actually one of the really key things you're sort of touching on here, it is particularly ironic, or maybe appropriate, I don't know which one, that this is happening in the university environment, which has been an environment in which kind of left-wing Jewish donors, left-wing Jewish faculty, left-wing Jewish presidents have had such a disproportionate effect over many decades. And now they kind of find themselves under siege, and particularly because they're sort of put in this white category, which of course legally they've always been in, but somehow they perceived themselves to really be, you know, kind of treated in the victim class. And the leftists sort of thought they could do kind of play around with these categories. And now they're sort of finding that that the kind of monster that they've unfortunately had a role in creating has come for them. And so that's been really negative. But it's interesting because guys like Ackman, and I've been very encouraging, you know, I think he's taking really positive steps toward reality bit by bit, but it's not universal. I had a Jewish classmate at Yale, actually, who shortly after this happened, you know, they knew that I was very involved in politics, and they got in touch with me and wanted me to sign some petition that basically was going to fold Jewish students into a DEI protected category. I mean, that's effectively what they wanted this petition to Yale to do. And I said, look, I'm totally against these neo-Marxist, these anti-Semitic, et cetera, protests that are going on campus, but I'm not signing up for a separate piece with these guys, you know, for Jews or for any other group. We have to uproot DEI. We have to uproot anti-white racism. We need to uproot all of this stuff root and branch, and we can't just be carving out new protected categories for every person. So folks like Ackman get that. I hope more and more people get that, but not everybody has gotten that still.
No, that's the central beating heart of this. This is why the saying is, it's not that Palestine would be free, but Palestine's being Arab. They have a, and they're going to have a reckoning of their own on their side of the football eventually, right? After they crush what they deem are the oppressors. Because Trevor Loudon has lectured on this for years, and I know a lot of people thought he was a screwball. This kind of red-green, this Sharia supremacism that's kind of merged with this neo-Marxist progressivism. But they think by taking care of Israel and the Jews, this is really an attack on the foundational elements of the United States, all the way back to the foundational elements of the Roman Republic, of which we're based on. And they see the enemy, and they see the enemy is us. And I totally agree with you. This is why I'm so upset about Bob Kraft being on Hannity. And he tried to make the argument in a very subtle way. Oh, we're marginalized. I said, hey, dude, you own a third of the football franchises in the National Football League. I don't think a bunch of hammerhead mix would say that's marginalized. But he tried to make the same argument that your friend made. Hey, we need to be cut into this deal. We need a protected class. The problem is the concept of protected classes. When you have that, you already have something allocated by race or ethnicity that's totally opposed to the foundational elements of this republic. Jeremy Carl.
You know, you're absolutely right. And again, that's why I called it the unprotected class, because I was pointing out the status of the diminishing white majority here as sort of uniquely unprotected, and that this is simply not a viable way for us to go forward as a nation. And again, there are many things. My colleague Christopher Caldwell kind of touched on this in his Civil Rights Act sets up a second constitution, and in many ways it's at odds with some of the fundamental freedoms, freedom of association, treating everybody equally, that we have in our first constitution. Although I think it's there fair to note that not all of that was embedded in the act. A lot of that was the deep state and the far left Supreme Court of the 70s and 80s and the civil rights bureaucracy and some of these other guys kind of adding things to the Civil Rights Act that if you go look at the original debates, were not there. And some of them were even directly opposed. They said, oh, of course, we're not doing that in this, very clearly. And then the deep state got a hold of it and said, yeah, no, actually, that is what it is. It's all about giving preferences to some races and not others.
Your article on the open borders, the Republic, in particular 376, the reason they had to accept this is that they had delayed for decades or centuries actually dealing with the problem. They always just try to kick the can down the road, right? You're seeing right here on these college campuses, this is a problem of not just the illegal alien invasion, but the immigration laws and how they've been twisted to create what's happening on these college campuses today. How is your understanding of this and applying it to the Roman Empire, where eventually they collapsed because of this, how do you think this plays out in the United States of America, particularly over the next 6, 7, 8 months to a year?
Well, I mean, clearly the border crisis is, which is of course entirely created by Biden and the Democrats, is a political liability for them, and they're concerned about it. And of course, we gave them, I don't know whether we gave them a political gift or not. I mean, obviously, it was a terrible thing to do that we did this Ukraine stuff without even getting anything for the border, because the one upside of that, at least politically, is that it will just show that we have continued chaos under Biden. But I do think that even the big cities, and I think the difference is now that maybe has changed the political dynamics of this a little bit, is that the Democrat cities are no longer a protected class, whereas it used to just be down at the border or wherever else where these illegals were going. They're now flooding in over this open border to the Democrat cities, to the point that they're simply saying uncle. And I think the other thing that could really, Steve, change things around, and this gets a little bit into your Sharia supremacism point, is if we get a terror attack. And that's almost, to me, not an if, but a when, because we're just letting all these unvetted folks through the border. And you can be sure that while most of them are not terrorists, that there are terrorists among them. When we get them, and it's really clear that this is a result of our open border, then I think the political dynamics of that are going to rebound in a very negative way against Biden. But it just shows really how desperate the Democrats are to enact the great replacement of the sort of historic American population, that they can figure this all out. They're not dumb, but they just figure they're going to play the long game and flood America with foreigners, and that they can get those foreigners to be special client classes for them.
So isn't this the irony when, in regards to the ethno-nationalists, is that the Hispanic citizens in the Rio, you see the polling in the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas, and you see it now in the polling of Black men, that they were both protected classes, but they understand that this invasion is principally not against the white working class. It's really against the inner city Blacks and against the Hispanic citizens. And they're waking up to the fact that, say, and they don't need a guy at Harvard to tell them, hey, I think I was protected in the past. I don't think I'm protected anymore. I think those guys are there to replace me and to take the resources into jobs and particularly drive down wages. Do you agree with that, that you're seeing an awakening? And that's why I keep saying it ain't about race. It's about class, and it's about economic power, sir.
100%. And I mean, I do think, obviously, I wouldn't have written a book about race if I didn't think that race is, at least in the way it's talked about, an important element of this. But I still 100% agree with what you just said. A classic example, even going back earlier, Cesar Chavez, who is like the great hero of the Latino kind of world from the 70s and his farm worker strikes, was a fanatical anti-illegal immigration advocate. And I shouldn't even use the word fanatical. He's just hardcore because he was an American citizen. He was protecting his American workers of Hispanic descent from the people who he called wetbacks, which was kind of a sort of unflattering term often used to describe Mexican illegals at that time. And so at the time, they were really hardcore, but somehow this tradition was suppressed. You're seeing the same thing in South Texas. You're seeing this elsewhere. One of the things I worry about, and this is why it's so important, though, to attack the Democrats directly on the issue of race, is the way the Democrats are able to push back against this is to have this separate category called Hispanic, by the way, invented for the 1980 census, to use that they can say, well, okay, so fine, this guy may come for your job, but we're going to give you a bunch of extra benefits based on your belonging in that category. And what I point out is that U.S. self-described Hispanics are four times more European by origin than they are anything else. A third of them are already intermarried. And if we could get rid of these racial preferences and encourage them to, you know, identify themselves essentially as the historic American majority over time, I think that's just what they're going to do. And culturally, religiously, in many other ways, they identify with the values of the Republican Party. But right now, the Democrats are using race to give them an incentive to keep them, in the Democratic fold. And that's what we really need to attack frontally.
Jeremy Carl's getting people's heads blown up because he's got both the Jews and the Latinos into the unprotected heretofore white class. It's an extraordinary book, and everybody ought to read it. It couldn't have come out. And I want to thank Tony Lyons and the team over at Skyhorse, another controversial book, but a author that really can back it up with a lot of intellectual firepower. It must be read. And I would really want the ethno-nationalist to read this book and to think about it. Okay, just to think about, because I keep arguing, they try to separate us on race. It's really about economic power. And they know how to use economic power because they play it quite smash mouth. And that's why they're allowing the invasion of this country. And just like Jeremy Carl's great piece, I think is up in the Federalist about this is not the first empire to ever collapse because of immigration. And I want to give a shout out to the Federalist to just putting up some amazing articles. Jeremy, where do people go get the book? Where do they find out where you're going to be around speaking, social media, all of it, brother?
Sure, absolutely. And thanks so much. I will be in New York City with the New York Young Republican Club is kind of doing a big event for me. If you just Google them, it's going to be a big New York book launch on May 4th. I'll be in D.C. on May 6th. That's a ticketed event. Both those are ticketed events. But as far as I know, you can anybody can go buy a ticket and would love to see folks there. In terms of media, you can find me on X/Twitter at Real Jeremy Carl. I have a Substack, The Course of Empire, that's new, that I kind of update all my stuff. That is jeremycarl.substack.com. And for the book, which I would love for folks to buy, because the more people buy it, the more people talk about it. It's not, believe me, if you know the economics of the book trade, it's not about getting me rich based on you buying the book, but it's about starting the conversation and make sure that people are really having this conversation. So you can go to Amazon, you can ask your local bookstore to open it, you can go to Barnes & Noble, wherever it is out, as of April 23rd. So it's been out a few days. It's doing really, really well. And a lot of folks are talking about it. And Steve, I really, really appreciate you having me on to have this discussion with you and appreciate your support.
No, it's a must read book. Whenever all the posse get it, and we'll figure out how to flood the zone with those two on the 4th and the 6th. Love New York Young Republicans. Okay, we're gonna take a short commercial break. Jeremy, thank you. Take a short commercial break. We've got Ben Harnwell from Rome, Captain Bannon is back from her European trip. We're going to get an update on all of that. Short commercial break. Back in the war room in a moment.
Are you tired of progressive corporations and exhausted trying to keep up with all the virtue signaling when you're simply trying to buy products? Progressive corporate America continues to push messaging that further alienates conservative Americans, all while eroding the future of the American dream. It's prominent all over the country. Companies like Starbucks strong-arming their customers to support abortion. Financial services like PayPal canceling customers for their political views. Makeup companies like Maybelline making a mockery of women by supporting transgender models. And beer companies like Bud Light forcing gender ideology on you when all you want is to enjoy a cold beer. Thankfully, we don't have to fund these companies any longer with our hard-earned dollars. With Public Square, we now have a solution. It's simple. Join the movement of millions of patriotic Americans who love truth, our country, and our Constitution at publicsq.com. That's publicsq.com. Public Square is an app and website where you can get connected to tens of thousands of businesses from all different industries that share your value for life, family, and freedom. Whether you're looking to buy coffee, find a new athletic clothing that knows what a woman is, and shop for clean skincare, or simply find a new restaurant in your community that won't lecture you about your political views, publicsq.com is your resource. Public Square also offers discounts to many high-quality businesses on the platform so that you can actually receive incentive for spending money with companies that don't hate you. Public Square is free to join as consumer or a business owner, and you can get started today at publicsq.com. Remember, either as a consumer or a business owner, download the app now. That's publicsq.com, publicsq.com.
Right now, millions of Americans face prescription medication shortages. The FDA's medication shortage list currently has over 120 prescription medications listed. Some patients are being forced into more expensive substitutes, while others are rationing what little medication they have left. Don't get caught unprepared. That's why I want you to pick up a Jace case today. The Jace case is a pack of essential antibiotics that can treat a long list of common bacterial illnesses, including UTIs, respiratory and skin infections, plus much more. And each case can be customized for your specific needs with dozens of add-on options.
Just fill out a simple online form and Jace handles the rest. From the online evaluation to licensed pharmacy delivery and ongoing care. Visit jacemedical.com and use code Bannon at checkout for an extra discount. That's promo code Bannon at Jace, J-A-S-E, jacemedical.com. Get the Jace case and get it today. Action, action, action. Criminals have access to more advanced tools than ever, and now they're using them to steal our most valuable asset. That would be your home. In Miami, an elderly woman didn't find out an empty plot of land she owned was stolen until she went to pay taxes. A stranger had already paid them, and property records showed she had sold the land. They had forged her signature and registered a fake deed. How scary is that? That's why you need to get Home Title Lock today. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and immerse yourself in this information. Think that it can't happen to you? Well, you are wrong. When's the last time you checked your home's title? All a thief has to do is forge your signature, refile as the new owner. And once your home is not in your name, it can get really ugly, and it can get really ugly fast. They can take out equity loans or even sell your house to an unsuspecting buyer who shows up at your door one day and says, "Hey, this baby is mine." Don't think your home insurance policy will protect you. It won't. Check your home today for free when you get to HomeTitleLock.com and use promo code Bannon at signup. That's HomeTitleLock.com, promo code Bannon at signup. You'll get a free scan of your home's title plus 30 days of protection totally free. That is 30 days of protection totally free. That's HomeTitleLock.com, promo code Bannon. Do not let these thieves steal your home in broad daylight.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room Battleground with Stephen K. Bannon.
Speaking of articles, we were able to grab an amazing piece and get the author up. Wendy Strzok Mahoney joins us from Undercover DC. Wendy, first off, you do a lot of different things. Explain to our audience, you're on a one-woman mission about this, and I want to talk about the Biden administration expands path to Muslim refugees for USIS announcement. I'm going to get to that, this great piece you've done there, but you're doing a lot of things. What are they?
Well, I was a mother for many years of five kids, and after the last one left for college, I decided to put myself on the path of saving America, so to speak. So I've been writing for Uncover DC for 4 years now. I'm managing editor for Freedom Forever, which is Landon Starbuck's organization. I also do a lot of volunteer work with Catherine and Greg, especially Open Inc. I'm in charge of their J6 collection. I'm doing some work with them on the True the Vote stuff. But this border stuff has been a big interest of mine. I've lived internationally. I'm not against immigration. I'm not against people coming to the U.S., but this is pretty much out of control from what I can tell.
But I want to talk about this. We just had Jeremy Carl on this amazing piece. He excerpt from the book that's up on the Federalist about not the first empire ever to collapse because of open borders. In fact, the very Roman Republic and empire that our founders looked to, particularly the Republic, it's the way they were ultimately destroyed. Be specific mm-hmm. now. Walk through your piece because it's quite amazing. What is the Biden regime doing as far as making sure they can get as many people in here from countries that are not part of the Judeo-Christian West, ma'am?
You know, you talk about getting your number two pencil out. I had to get my number two pencil out on this one. I'm telling you, what they're doing is they have all these international offices, and with the opening of these two that they just opened, or well, they're opening it May 9th, they're opening two offices in Qatar and Turkey. And as you know, the Biden administration has found pretty much every way they can to usher in every known nationality and immigrant in the world through our very open borders at this point. But with this, and it really turned my head, because what they're doing is they're taking it to the source. These are Muslim nations. I have many Muslim friends. I'm not against Muslims, but when you go to the source and you start essentially what I view as, in my opinion, recruiting people to come here, and they are working with, you know, of course, NGOs, local NGOs, and then kind of concurrent with all that, the Biden administration has expanded the definition of asylum and refugees. I mean, you have Todd Bensman on there all the time. He talks about this stuff all the time. They're expanding humanitarian parole. They're bringing, you know, they have the cap at 125,000 per year. That is pretty normal for the last couple of years, but it's not normal to fulfill the cap. They plan to get there. When Biden took office, there were about 400 a month coming in. Now there are about 10,000. And we've got about 10 million that have come in already. And so now let's talk about Muslims in this country. As you know, historically, I mean, Muslims pretty much swept across Europe. You know, they have big families. They have very, very different worldview from Western worldview. America is a country that expects people to assimilate. And that's very important. You know, we want people to come here who kind of mesh with our Christian worldview, with Western worldview. And it's not because we don't like other cultures, but the Muslim culture is very, very different from ours. And they tend to acculturate, not assimilate. And what that means is, you know, you see as more and more Muslims come into a country, for example, you see in Paris or in London, you know, you've got these no-go zones. And, you know, they try to tell you that they don't exist and that's not a thing. I'm here to tell you it's a thing. And, you know, when you start seeing people come in great numbers, then they start kind of taking over parts of the city and their religion and all these things that really don't mesh with the local culture and values. And then you have a big problem.
Hang on 1 second. I want to go back and I want you to be specific. You're saying that they're setting up recruiting centers, basically recruiting to all these programs they put in. Where, and they put this announcement out, where are these new recruitment centers in the Middle East?
They're in Qatar and in Turkey. And those are primarily, predominantly Muslim nations. And, you know how we talk about CBP1
Hang on. Why do they need a Qatar is the center. It's the head of the snake. It is the center for the Muslim Brotherhood because they protect them there. It's also the money laundering to the Persians, right? For their assault against Israel and the United States. It was the one country when we went over, because remember we did Riyadh, Jerusalem, and Rome in that sequence, President Trump's first in May of 2017, the whole purpose of going to Riyadh was to have a massive meeting of the Muslim nations to sign basically an agreement, a memorandum of understanding that would stop the financing of terrorism. And who was the one group that braced us up and gave us a hard time and didn't want to do it? Qatar. Why did Qatar not want to do it? Because Qatar is the financing center of the Muslim Brotherhood, which Hamas is a franchisee, but it's also a financing center for the Persians. They take both the Shiite and the Sunni side of the equation and they get it all worked up. So why does the U.S. government have a recruiting center in Qatar to allow more non-Westerners into the United States? How do they justify that?
Your guess is as good as mine. I would guess that it's related to getting as many people in this country that might cause trouble as they possibly can. I mean, you know, the more you invite, the more likelihood there is of having radical elements in there. And, you know, we are months away from a big election with a guy that they don't like. And, you know, I mean, I tend to think it's to cause chaos. I mean, I can't think of a reason, to be honest, from my point of view, why they would go to places to recruit at the source Muslims, refugees who have poor documentation, a lot of them who are not likely vetted as well as some other countries. I can't imagine a good reason for them to go to the source. And these two offices are really novel ideas. I mean, the other nine are, you know, Christian places. And I mean, we've got Beijing as one of them. So, you know, possibility of creating problems with the CCP here in the U.S. But I think that must be a rhetorical question.
Yeah. Where do people go? We got to bounce, but where do people go to get all your writings, what you're putting up, what you're working on? Because you've dedicated your life now to saving this republic. So I want to make sure people get access to you.
Yeah. So I write for Uncover DC. I have my own Substack. I'm W Mahoney 5 on Twitter. I'm Wendy S. Mahoney on Getter and Wendy S. Mahoney on Truth Social. So, yes, thank you for all you do, Steve. I really admire your work and you make me laugh.
you're the reason that this show works. We got so many people out there like you that are grinding every day, and it's just a great example. And the piece was absolutely stunning. And what I loved about it was the detail that you went into it. Mo and Grace will push it out and we'll get ready to read it. Look forward to having you back on, ma'am. Keep up the fight and keep up the good work.
I will do it. We have to win this.
We have to win. We have to win.
Hugs,
we must win,
Steve?
And we will win if we don't quit, we'll win. Thank you, Wendy. I want to play Poso's a clip from Poso this morning. It's an extraordinary interview. I thought he's in Madrid, and then I want to bring in Mo Bannon. Two incredibly powerful, shows you the rise of the right throughout not just Europe but the world. Give me your assessment. You're in Spain today. Give me your assessment of where we are in all this.
Steve, what we're doing on this, and people need to understand that this movement is absolutely growing beyond borders, beyond connections that we've seen together, say in front of the Museum of the Prado right here in Madrid, Spain. And we're putting together a new international alliance of anti-globalists. And it's ironic, of course, because we are America first, but that's why I want to join with the people who are England first and France first and Spain first and Romania first and Hungary first, because that's what a nationalist is. That's what a patriot is. And so coming to all of these places like Madrid here today, where they almost saw, we actually came very close to seeing the resignation of the socialist prime minister this morning. He said he was thinking about resigning, gave a huge press conference nationally, decided not to. He's under huge corruption from his wife's side. The right is having an upsurgence because the global left, the global communist left, has gone absolutely too far. People are sick of it. And you are seeing this breakout, not just from the patriots of America in 2024 with the polls, and CNN had the poll where Trump is up 9. When you split it out three ways, the RCP average, if you guys have that up, the battleground states, Trump is up in every single battleground state in the RCP average, including Nevada. And the people around the world, everyone I talk to, they say, Jack, they don't say, is Trump going to win? And this is what's so telling, Steve. You know what everyone says to me, Romania, Hungary, now here in Spain, they say to me, is Trump going to be allowed to win? That's the question that everyone is asking.
Jack Smith, Jack Posobiec was there, and he's doing a fantastic job in Madrid. We're going to lead with Tanya and Jack tomorrow morning at 10. Mo, I've made a command decision. We're actually going to play your speech. I think we have it now. We're going to play that tomorrow, have you back on. But give me your assessment. When you met with people, what's the spirit like there? You heard Jack saying these nationalists, you were at the Hungry CPAC, and I want to thank Mercedes and Matt Schlapp for just doing another extraordinary job, and particularly your host in Hungary, Viktor Orban, and the entire government over there. It was just incredible to see it streaming. What is your sense of the spirit of these folks as you see the rise of the populist nationalist right throughout the world?
Well, I agree with what Jack said, that the movement is growing beyond borders and beyond connections. We saw that at CPAC Hungary from leaders from multiple countries, leaders on the right from multiple countries, you know, banding together to understand that we all need to fight. We can't let globalists win, and they will do anything to win. So we need to band together, make connections, and form, like Jack said, that alliance, that international alliance of anti-globalists in order to make sure that the globalists do not win.
Talk to me. Did you also get approached? Did people, were they worried about this concept of the deep state, the administrative state, stopping, you know, one of the things we've been hammering on in the last hour, this criminal conspiracy, has it seeped out to people in these countries when you were approaching hanging out with folks and building relationships? Are they concerned that not that Trump can win at the polls, but that the deep state will not allow him to take power?
Yes, they are very concerned, and they understand that if he's not allowed to win, that we will continue to have a disaster in this country like we have under the Biden regime. And they understand that it will seep out into these other countries, that that Trump must be back in the White House in order, you know, for for the globalists to be shut down. So, yes, exactly what Jack said. They are concerned that the deep state will not allow Trump to win, but they understand that he must be back in the White House.
Okay, I know you've got an engagement, an event you're going to go to with Matt Gaetz and Ginger. We'll let you bounce. We're going to play the speech when we got more time, and you have more time tomorrow. Mo, what's your social media so people can track you and follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Getter at Maureen_Bannon and also on Instagram at RealMaureenBannon.
Say hi to Matt and Ginger. Appreciate it. Thank you, ma'am. Captain Bannon, very, very good trip over there with the entire crew. It was incredible. Want to thank once again Matt and Mercedes and CPAC for putting that on. Okay, I've got a cold open with Ben live from Rome. Let's go and play it.
That 99% of the meetings I go to, I'm the only non-white person in the room. But why are we so surprised when the most senior positions in Scotland are filled almost exclusively by those who are white? Take my portfolio alone. The Lord President, white. The Lord Justice Clerk, white. Every High Court judge, white. The Lord Advocate, white. The Solicitor General, white. The Chief Constable, white. Every Deputy Chief Constable, white. Every Assistant Chief Constable, white. The Head of the Law Society, white. The Head of the Faculty of Advocates, white. Every Prison Governor, white. And not just Justice, the Chief Medical Officer, white. The Chief Nursing Officer, white. The Chief Veterinary Officer, white. The Chief Social Work Advisor, white. Almost every trade union in this country headed by people who are white. In the Scottish Government, every Director General is white. Every chair of every public body is white. That is not good enough.
Okay, so tomorrow you're going to be back and join us, hopefully in the morning show, to go through all the things in Ukraine, because tons happening there, but I got to address this. Is Scotland, I thought of Scotland was a white nation. This guy got turfed out today. Walk me through who this guy is. How did he end up as a senior member of the Scottish, what I guess, National Party? How radical is this thing gone? And correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't Scotland a white country?
Steve, that was good afternoon to you. That was Hamza Yousaf, who is the Scottish up until this morning, resigned now, Scotland's first minister, basically Scotland's prime minister. And one of the things that he neglected to mention in his little list there was the population of Scotland itself, which is directly your question, which is 96% white. So really, his race baiting, his militant race baiting failed. He served 1 year. He was elected in March last year. He served 1 year and he has resigned basically in failure today. Look, I know I haven't got much time, but the Warren posse will know this guy. They'll remember him because this is the guy behind the Hate Crime Act, which made it a criminal offence in Scotland to misgender a trans person. That's now a crime in Scotland. You can now serve up to 7 years in prison for it. This is the thing that J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter, was so courageous and, I think, principled in her opposition towards. This guy, why did he resign? Well, there was infighting in the Scottish legislature. It's not really sort of important to go into. But basically, the Greens withdrew their support. He didn't cut them a deal in the end. They withdrew from the coalition. He was going to lose a confidence vote towards the end of this week, so he just called it quits. I want to drill down on one point, though, because I think it dovetails perfectly in what Posso and Mo were just saying, right?
amongst, so this is the, this was the leader of the Scottish National Party, right? Amongst SNP members, his job satisfaction ratings were 29% approval, 36% disapproval. That is a net -7% amongst his own members. That just goes to show you how the woke agenda is failing. As Mo was saying, people are waking up to this. They're becoming informed. They're becoming engaged. They're becoming alert to what's going on, and they're rejecting it. -7, Steve, is political suicide. I think only Joe Biden can look at that those kind of figures with envy. Right. This is how bad. This is how bad they are, right? And this is what's happening across Europe.
You connected the dot, and before you go, I know you got to bounce, is that it was the hate crime. It was this just the most radical hate crime bill about language and speech I think ever passed by Western democracy. That's is what led to his demise. The Scottish people were going, when they actually read it and saw what it was, and J.K. Rowling was a hero for stepping up, they go, this is insanity. This is not Scotland. And that's coming from left wingers. Am I incorrect on that, that that's what really led to his demise?
It's absolutely true. Basically, he pushed a militant woke position that was way to the left of what his predecessor, Nicola Sturgeon, who's basically a fighting little communist herself, but way to the left of what she was pushing because it was more culturally woke. And that's not where the Scots are. The Scots are really agitating for a large degree of cultural independence from their southern neighbour, England. They're still within the United Kingdom right now. There's a large movement for actual national independence for the Scots. But it's basically sort of in the William Wallace mode, Steve, the Braveheart mode. That's sort of where the beating heart of the Scots are. It's not in this cultural Marxist woke ideology. And basically, he lost people. His support fell through the floor, and he just basically called it a day today because there's pretty no point going on. He was a lame duck.
Ben, where do people go to get your content? You've got much better engagement than I do. I'm quite jealous, but I love reposting your stuff because it's so great. Where do they go?
There's some fantastic posts at the top of my feed right now, Steve. At Harnwell, simply my surname. I thought it's written there. Harnwell, at Harnwell, on Getter, which is my social media platform of choice. Oh, Steve, if I come onto the show tomorrow, there's some important things going on in Ukraine, which we'll cover. I'll try and push some of that on Getter as well.
And with the United States, we'll have you on in the morning show. Thank you very much, Ben Harnwell. Birchgold.com/Ben and End of the Dollar Empire. The fifth installment's out. It's free. Get you better understanding of the Federal Reserve digital currency. That's a winner, not. Lou Dobbs is next. We're back here tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, and Ben will join us in the morning show. Until then, go to birchgold.com/Ben and get all your information. Lou Dobbs next.
True or false? Using your tax refund to pay off credit card debt is a smart thing. Actually, that's false. DoneWithDebt.com published a brilliant strategy designed to let you keep your hard-earned tax refund and reduce or eliminate credit card debt. Most Americans owe thousands in credit card debt. In fact, Daily Mail's got a story that 56 million Americans carry credit card debt, and that debt will take years to pay off, if you pay it off at all. Done with Debt found that filing bankruptcy is usually not the answer, and taking out loans to pay off credit cards usually increases the debt. When you engage Done with Debt, their legal experts and skilled negotiators take on the credit card companies for you. Their winning strategies are designed with one goal: solve your debt situation quickly and permanently. First things first, chat with a Done with Debt strategist and explore your solutions. Some debt fighting strategies are time sensitive, so you'll need to move quickly. For a free consultation, visit donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. Do it today. Take action.
Room at checkout to save 67%. Do it again. War Room Health, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Go there today. If you're going to be part of the posse, you need a strong heart. You need a lion's heart. How we're going to do that is with Salty. Go there. Do it today. Check it out.